Committee, I'm going to change from the order of the bills that are listed on here a little bit. The people for House Bill 2093 are here and ready, so we'll start with that. I'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2093, and Janet, can you give us a briefing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. House Bill 2093 comes to you from the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. It would modify the current requirements for written notice of increased likelihood of Oregon OSHA inspections. It replaces a requirement that such notice be sent to all employers whose accepted disabling claims rate is above the state average, and to all employees whose industry rate is rated as unsafe. So that's a current requirement, and it would instead require such notice be sent to those employers whose place of employment is rated as among the most unsafe places of employment in the state. There's also a number of grammatical changes that you might recognize in the bill. Mr. Chair, my staff measure summary indicates at the very bottom that that would be a reduction in the number of letters sent by the agency. That's the total number of letters that are sent, and the reduction would be more on the order of 3,000 to 4,000 letters.
So no physical impact.
Mr. Chair, the Legislative Fiscal Office and the agency have indicated that the savings would be on the order of about $4,000 a year in mostly postage and paper savings. And so the fiscal office is giving it a no fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you, Janet. Could I have Pat Allen and Peter DeLuca, please? Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Patrick Allen, Office of Regulatory Streamlining. Just by way of very brief introduction, a couple of days ago when I provided an overview to you about streamlining, we talked about a package of 34 bills that are one sort or another of streamlining. Today, House Bill 2093 and later House Bill 2085 are two bills in that package that are part of our streamlining effort. At the time, I mentioned that a number of these bills, in and of themselves, don't necessarily represent massive changes in public policy, but by virtue of lots of incremental changes and adjustments, we're able to impact the state's business climate, and these are two good examples of that sort of bill. I won't talk in any detail about this one, but Pete DeLuca, Administrator of Oregon OSHA, is here to do that on House Bill 2093.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, my name is Peter DeLuca, members of the committee. I'm the Administrator of Oregon OSHA. The bill is placed before you for the purpose of correcting a problem that we created about 4 years ago when we passed the language that is currently in the statute. The intent of that particular legislation was to notify businesses that are the most unsafe in the state of the fact that they are and give them an opportunity to correct the problems. We notify them that they may have an additional enhanced we would call it an opportunity to visit with one of our compliance officers because of their status on this particular list, and we hope that perhaps they will use our consultative services to help them to take care of whatever problems that they might have. The problem is that the way that that particular language is written, and everybody at the time agreed that this was a good idea. If you are an employer in a low-hazard industry and you employ 10 people and you go for 10 years without having any workers' comp claims, any injuries on the job whatsoever, and then you have one injury, you're going to come up on this list and you're going to get a letter that says you're one of the worst employers in the state. Because it's ultimately, you know, then your rate would be 1 out of 10 employees had been injured in the past year. So when we send these letters out, we get less of phone calls from people that say, gee, I didn't think I was unsafe. Why am I on this list? And it's just not very good government for government to be doing this. Now, the solution that we're offering is we make a determination every year based upon what information is available to us, who the really most unsafe workplaces in the state are, and send those people letters. And it eliminates the problem of notifying people who are really safe that they are unsafe. and then having to explain to them how they got on this list. That's the intent of this legislation. That's the purpose that is in front of you. It would save us a little bit of money. It's pocket change. That's not why we're doing it. We're doing it because if we're going to notify people that they're unsafe, we think that we should really be targeting those people that are the most unsafe. We worked through a number of advisory committees, interest groups. We have run this concept by our partners in business and labor. None of them have had any problems. The legislator who sponsored the legislation that we're trying to modify here is Representative Krupp, and I've spoken with him, and he's indicated he has no trouble with this concept either, so we would urge you to please pass it.
Thank you, Pete. Any questions? Representative Schaffer.
Thank you. You have a logical argument. It makes sense, and that small employer doesn't need a letter. My question is, if it's one out of 10 in 10 years, I can appreciate that. If it's one out of 1,000 and their rate's one out of 10, that is a problem. Now, where do you draw the line, and who makes that decision?
Well, the current statute says that if they are in the bottom half, the worst half of their standard industrial code, of their classification, where they're grouped with other people doing the same kind of work, mm-hmm. then they would get a letter. So whether the trigger would be 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 20 or 1 out of 5 depends upon what that particular industry, what their record would be. The proposal would allow us to take a look at that and say, well, you know, 1 out of 10, when you've got 1,000 employees, is not very good, and you're going to get a letter. But it allows us to examine it on a yearly basis and make that determination and really target those employers that are injuring the most people.
Yes.
Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. It looks like you answered all the questions for us. Is there anyone here? That's all the people that were signed up. Anyone here that wants to testify on House Bill 2093? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2093 and open up a work session on House Bill 2093. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we accept House Bill 2093 as written.
To the floor with
it. To the floor with the DuPath recommendation. A little rusty.
I'll second it.
Don't need a second.
Also a little rusty.
First bill. Representative Kitts moves that we send House Bill 2093 to the floor with the DuPath recommendation. All those in favor will vote aye. Opposed, nay. Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Esquivel?
Yay.
Representative Gilman?
Yes.
Representative Colby?
Aye.
Representative Kitts?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Chair Brown?
Aye. Motion carries. With the we can place, if we have a unanimous vote, we can place them on the consent calendar. That means it's our first bill. I think that we should have someone have the honor of carrying that first bill on the floor. Do I have any volunteers?
I'd like to volunteer Representative Holby.
I'll second that.
I'll third that.
I win.
We're dying to see this.
I used to like you.
I told you it changed.
Would you like to carry the bill on the floor?
Certainly, if the chairman would wish me to, I will.
Thank you very much. And so, Representative Holby will carry the bill on the floor. Okay, I want to open a public hearing on House Bill 2085. Janet, you want to give us a little better?
Thank you, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair.
Oops. You're rusty, too.
Monday?
That's a good one. I don't even think I've had a Madam Chair. Not for a long time. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2085 is brought to you by the State Board of Accountancy.
And
285, the first bill on the
agenda. Yeah, up on top.
and would allow certified public accountants in other states to perform peer review of certified public accountants and public accountants licensed in Oregon for activities that require peer review. Mr. Chair, it would also declare an emergency and take effect on passage, and the agency administrator is here to explain the details and the reasons for the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. And the person is, we're going to call
oh,
up
I'm
here.
Sorry.
Okay, Carol Reeves and Patrick Allen, please. Patrick, you don't have to come up. All right.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Carol Reese, and I am the administrator for the Oregon Board of Accountancy. I appreciate the opportunity to provide you with information about this bill this morning. Thank you very much for allowing me to do that. I want to talk about three things that I think are the keynotes to this bill: peer review, attest services, and public protection. But I also want to explain to you that the Board of Accountancy licenses two levels of accountants in Oregon. The board licenses certified public accountants, and the requirements for licensing of a certified public accountant is pretty uniform among all the states in the country. The board also licenses public accountants, and Oregon is one of only 10 states that continue to license public accountants in the country. And the requirements for licensing of this level of public accountant are not at all uniform from one state to another. And that is part of the mix-up and the reason for this bill. So first of all, let me tell you about peer review. Peer review, the purpose for peer review is, of course, to provide public protection. Public accounting firms who perform attest services are required to enroll in a peer review program. Peer reviews are performed by licensed certified public accountants on the work of another certified public accountant. The peer review process is regulated by nationally approved standards, and the people who act as peer reviewers are qualified under nationally approved standards. So there are standards that govern those people who perform peer reviews on a national level. Attest service is when a licensed certified public accountant, or in Oregon also a licensed public accountant, provides a statement, a formal statement, as to the financial well-being of an organization and whether the financial statements fairly represent to the public the financial position and operating situation of that organization. Attest services are also performed according to nationally accepted professional standards. The purpose of the attest service is to assist the users of those financial statements. For example, banks that lend money, credit agencies that extend credit, or leasing companies that lease equipment based on credit. All of these may require a company to provide them with the attest service of a certified public accountant before they extend credit. This is their assurance that the organization is going to be able to repay the loan or the money that is extended to them. So this sort of service is one that's called a third-party reliance service. There are people other than the CPA and the CPA's client who rely on the services that are being performed by the certified public accountant. The most well-known among these are the financial statements that are prepared for publicly registered companies. And when those financial statements are not properly reviewed, then there can be very great consequence to the public, because the investing public is very much a third party that relies on financial statements that are audited by licensed certified public accountants. Finally, the need for public protection is higher when there is third-party reliance on the services that are provided by the certified public accountant. However, in this case, I must urge you that public protection is not diminished because the certified public accountant who performs peer review is not licensed in Oregon. There's nothing unique about Oregon's attest services or Oregon's licensed certified public accountants that requires only an Oregon license to perform that peer review. The purpose of this bill is to remove from ORS 673 a reference that requires peer review to be performed by a certified public accountant or public accountant who is licensed in Oregon, thus excluding licensed certified public accountants from another state. In the 1999 legislative session, the definition of peer review was included in the statute. There was a very extensive revision done to the Oregon Public Accounting Statute in 1999. And it's our belief that this was an inadvertent addition and that it is really a matter of sentence structure, that what was intended was to allow public accountants who are licensed in Oregon to perform peer review, but not to require a licensed Oregon certified public accountant. So we believe that the reference to the licensing statute, which is ORS 673-150, was simply placed in the sentence in such a way that it placed the requirement on both certified public accountants and public accountants. It is an unnecessary requirement, and the purpose of the bill is to remove this unnecessary requirement. It's also important to note that this bill will remove a burden from certified public accountants who require peer review in Oregon. There may be business reasons for them to have a peer reviewer who is from another state. Perhaps the certified public accountant has its business in Baker City, and they might have a greater proximity and greater familiarity with a certified public accountant in Boise, Idaho. And there would be no reason that that licensee in Boise, Idaho, would not be qualified to perform peer review for the person in Baker City. It also may increase the cost of peer review. And, of course, the costs of peer review then are going to affect the cost of the attest services that are the requirement for peer review. So we see here a bill that will not only streamline business opportunities for our licensed certified public accountants, but also not impose additional costs to the clients of those certified public accountants. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Carol, for your testimony. A good example would be Representative Butler living in Ontario in the certified public accountant.
You are right. That's the example I should have thought of. We have a board member in Baker City, and so that is the city that came to mind.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Rob Douglas.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rob Douglas. I'm in the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. Joan Buck and I have had the privilege of representing those folks since 1978, and it's a relationship that we value. We are here today in support of House Bill 2085. We feel peer review is important, and we think this allows peer review to be conducted in a efficient, economical manner.
Thank you, Rob. Is there any questions? All just shaking their head. Thank you very much for this one. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on House Bill 2085? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2085 and open a work session on House Bill 2085.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Katz.
I would move that we accept House Bill 2085 and recommend its passage to the floor.
With the due pass recommendation.
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Kitts moves that we send House Bill 2085 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Gelman.
Aye.
Representative Polby.
Aye.
Representative Kitts.
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative Shields.
Aye.
Representative Estima.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. And motion carries. Do we want to place this on the consent calendar, or does someone wish to carry the bill? I warn you that Representative Shield volunteers to carry the bill.
Seeing the writing on the wall.
Representative Butler, I'm sure, will have some questions. Thank you. Anyway, Representative Shields will carry the bill on the floor then.
And Mr. Chair, since it's a lower number than House Bill 2093, he will probably be first.
Praise the Lord.
Okay. Had I only known.
But Mr. Chair, I'm the one who turns things in, so if I wait a little while,
this could be some leverage here.
Okay, on these here, we have people signed up to this one. Huh? Okay, committee, on the next two bills, House Bill 2875 and 2076, my intention is to take testimony from anyone today that wants to testify on and then carry both of these bills over the next week. And with that, I'll open, I guess I could open parallel hearings, right?
Well, I think it's a little cleaner.
Okay, all right. We'll open hearing on House Bill 2075. And could I have Craig Smith, please? Good morning, folks.
Good morning. Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is Craig Smith. I'm the administrator of the Construction Contractors Board. It's a pleasure to be before you today to introduce this bill. I'm joined with Sally Ridenour. Sally is the staffer at the Construction Contractors Board that works the closest with the program that we're going to talk about today. This is a bill that affects certified home inspectors. Certified home inspectors are the folks that you would call in the event you were going to buy a existing residential structure and you wanted to have it checked out prior to buying it. They're not the folks that inspect for building code purposes. It's a different animal. Before you is our written material. I want to briefly go through that so you know what's there. Page one is the testimony today, followed by page two. The next two documents are letters from the board chair and letters from the chair of the Home Inspector Advisory Committee that designed these rules. The other documents are supportive materials to this program, and we offer it just for the record and for background material. What this bill would do, this bill would provide specific legal authority for the board to adopt home inspector standards of practice. It's necessary because the agency is concerned that although it has designed these rules and regulations over the last 8 years or so, that there may not be specific legal authority to do so. We have advice from our AG back in 97 that we had such authority. Today we're not quite so sure. So we come to you to ask to make sure it's your intent that we have these kind of regulations. We're asking you to support House Bill 2075 and pass it out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Can I answer questions?
Thank you, Craig. Any questions? Start with Representative Hovel in the room. Move this direction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just out of curiosity, do the home inspector standards of practice, do you also have a test that qualifies home inspectors?
Thank you for the question. Mr. Chair, Representative Holdy, there is a test that is currently required. It is fairly exhaustive. I don't know the passage rate offhand, about
80%
eventually. But there are requirements to sit for that test, and there is a test.
Thank you.
Representative Gilman.
I just wanted to be sure I understood. What you're doing is making sure that you have authority in statute to do what you're already doing.
Thank you for the question. Chair Brown, Representative Yeoman, that's exactly correct.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming to testify this morning. Appreciate it. And could I have Steve Telfair, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Congratulations on your quick start. I'm delighted, and it's fun to see two freshmen have an opportunity to carry a bill first up.
We can hardly wait.
I represent the Oregon Real Estate Inspectors Association, which is an association of just a little over 100 certified home inspectors scattered all over the state of Oregon. We are very supportive of this bill. Frankly, the standards of practice have been very soundly crafted for a number of years. Now when we get this new word from the Attorney General's office that maybe there is an authority, we think it's time that we make it very clear in the statute that we have authority. I might also just take half a minute to answer Representative Holby's question. The process of certification involves a very substantial test. It's 200 questions in 5 separate divisions. And the passage rate on each of the sections is obviously a little bit different, but it's a very substantial test. Thank you. Be happy to answer questions.
Steve, I know in conversations I've had with you before that you had had some you'd want to have the opportunity to talk to your group about this bill. Are you satisfied?
I might. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did meet last night with the president and treasurer of the association. Oddly enough, we didn't realize it at the time this bill was scheduled. There's a board meeting of the association tonight, and that's why I'm requesting that we move ahead with this bill, because it's frankly very comfortable with us. The next bill on your menu, 2076, however, we would request that we defer until next week so we have a chance to present that to the board and see what their position is.
Any other questions? Let's see. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would wish to testify on House Bill 2075? Seeing none, we'll close the works or the hearing on 2075, and might as well open a work session on House Bill 2075. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we move House Bill 2075 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Kitts. Representative Kitts moves House Bill 2075 to the floor at the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, will you call the roll?
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Kitts?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Escobar?
Aye.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Chair Brown?
Aye. Motion carries. And Representative Escobar, would you like to carry this bill on the floor?
Oh, I'd love to. Just
thank you.
To
it.
And it's the lowest number.
And it's the lowest number, too.
That's good. I like the number.
Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2076. And is there anyone that's here to testify on that day or wants to testify? Same people. Craig Smith, please.
Chair Brown and members of the committee, Craig Smith again, Construction Contractors Board. I wish this was as uncontroversial as the previous measure, but it's not. This again has to do with home inspectors. When the law was crafted back in 1997, there was an exclusion carved out. That exclusion allowed contractors licensed between the years 1991 and 1997 to be able to continue to do home inspections without being certified. We call those exempt home inspectors. It likely made sense. After all, it was passed by the Assembly at the time. But today, things have moved on. In the package before you, at the very last page, is an explanation of a difference between what a certified home inspector has to offer and what we call an exempt home inspector is required to do. We think that it's time to close that loophole. There's a lot of ways to do that. One would be to get rid of the exemption in its entirety. This would require those folks to go ahead and take the test and become certified if they choose to do so. Another way to do it would be some form of compromise, and that's what we have before you today. In this compromise, those people, and we're not sure how many there are, there could be as many as a few dozen, would be required to pick a date certain, 1990 or 2007, to either become a certified home inspector or not, and the exemption would end in 2007. The carrot would be that they wouldn't have to take the test. Okay? The advantage, however, is that they'd have to abide by all the regulations, which they don't have to abide by today. Perhaps the most important of which is the ethical consideration of being able to offer the inspection services in total and then turn around the next day and do the work. Today, those folks can do that. We'd like to see that put a stop to. Certified home inspectors cannot. Statutorily, they're prohibited, or they're not allowed to. And we think it would be a good Oregon law. We certainly request your support. Obviously, there's something about this compromise that is distasteful for both home builders, because it puts an end to something, and inspectors, because it allows some folks to get on board without taking the test. But we think it's a compromise that makes sense. There's not a lot of them out there, and it would finally close the door on this exemption. Can I offer can I entertain any questions?
Thank you, Craig. Any questions? Representative Holby.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about the test and this exemption. So your proposal would allow certain general contractors or home builders who have not passed the same home inspection test to continue to inspect homes, or I assume is what you're referring to, at least to this future date, and what happens beyond that?
Okay. Thank you for the question. Chair Brown, Representative Holby, today they are allowed to do the inspections, and it will continue if the law is not changed. What this proposal would do is put an end to that exemption, but would allow them a year and a half to sign up as a certified home inspector. Once they do that, they're obliged to go by all the rules and regulations that every other certified home inspector is required to do, including the ethical consideration I talked about, as well as written contracts, a fairly exhaustive amount of standards of practice, and continuing education. Does that answer your question, sir?
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'm just trying to find out, are you going to require these folks that haven't taken the test or passed this home inspection test to continue to inspect homes?
Chair Brown and Representative Holby, currently they're allowed to do that. After 2007, they would not be, unless they signed up as a certified home inspector.
Follow up. Just signing up as a certified home inspector, are you going to require them to take that test at that point?
Thank you for the question. Chair Brown, Representative Foley, they would not be required to take the test.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, please.
Representative Schaffer.
Thank you. The group that fits inside this time frame and the folks that have had to take the test that don't fit inside, is there any difference between the quality of inspections between those two groups that you can tell me about? Is there any data showing any difference, or is it pretty much the same?
Chair Brown and Representative Schaffler, we don't have any data. We have anecdotal evidence that suggests that on some occasions the folks that are not properly certified don't do as good a job. If you have the time, we'd like to tell you a very brief story that Sally had as an experience with a non-certified home inspector. Can we do that?
Certainly.
If you look on the materials that we passed out at 6, there's a comparison of the certified home inspectors and the exempt home inspectors. the exempt home inspectors do not have to follow the same rules and guidelines as the certified home inspectors, do not have to provide a written contract unless the inspection costs $2,500 or more. So there's quite a difference. Before I began working with the Construction Contractors Board, my husband and I purchased
a home. Excuse me a minute. What page was that, Lisa?
That's page, it's the last page.
Page one, the last page. Okay, that's now we're all on the same page.
I'm on a different page.
Attachment 6, not page 6.
Thank you.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Attachment 6. When my husband and I purchased our home, we were not knowledgeable at that time about anything about home inspectors or home inspections. It was our first home, and our real estate agent recommended an exempt home inspector who did the home inspection and gave us a written report, but it was not exhaustive. It was not at the detail of what a certified home inspector would do. And in fact, the home at the time did not have the water turned on or the power turned on. And this gentleman said that he tested the water, turned on all the faucets, and that the plumbing was good and that the electrical was good. And when we read that, we went, well, how did you know, since the power wasn't on and the water wasn't turned on in the home? And then once we moved into the home, all the plumbing disintegrated the moment we turned on the water, and all the electrical needed to be replaced, the panel needed to be replaced, and we were out about a little over $8,000. So I think if we had the benefit of a certified home inspector, we might have had a little different outcome.
Representative Esposito.
Yes, actually, the licensing was stemmed from my mother's house. About 9-10 years ago, she bought a house in Brownsville. At that time, they had a registration number that they were passing off as a contractor's number, which was very misleading. And so it was the same scenario where the inspector, what I think, did a drive-by because he obviously didn't go underneath the house, didn't look at the electrical as well. But anyway, to make a long story short, the plumbing was inadequate and there was water underneath the house, which he didn't disclose. And so through that, I worked through Diana Ballou, which I'm sure some of you remember Diana on the board, and she initiated this. I believe she fought very hard for this to get it to come to fruition. There is a difference. I am a realtor. There is a difference between a contractor and an inspector. Wow. Does a contractor understand wood destroying infestation? I'm not sure. Do they understand some idiosyncrasies about homes? Yeah, they understand structural. They understand how to build one. They know plumbing. They know electrical, things of this nature. But I think there's some differences between a inspector. In fact, there's some big differences between an inspector and a contractor. And I would like to see us sew this up.
So, what we're going to do here, how will that impact this woman's, the person who inspected her house, the house they bought? I mean, how's that going to prevent that from happening until they get caught? How are we going to weed them out? How's this going to help weed them out?
Chair Brown, Representative Schaffler, it won't be a guarantee, but one of the things that once they become a certified home inspector, there is a fairly exhaustive contract requirement. There are disclosures that have to be given. There is continuing education on target on the industry that they'll have to go by, and we hope that this will bring a much better product.
Plus, we have the power to enforce the standards of practice. So in the case of my situation, if that home inspector had been certified, I could have filed a complaint with the CCB, and that person could have received citations for violating the standards of practice and the regulations.
Are these certified home inspectors bonded, or do they carry errors in admission insurance?
Thank you for the question, Chair Brown. The certified home inspectors get the certification, but they cannot work by themselves. They have to be an employee or have themselves licensed as a construction contractor. The construction contractor has both insurance and bond requirements, not errors in admission, but they do have insurance and they do have a bond.
Representative Escobar.
Well, you actually asked my question because I believe you can attach a bond if you have, is it a $5,000, $10,000 bond?
Chair Brown and Representative Escobar, it's a $15,000 bond if it chooses to have a general contractor's license. It could be as low as a $10,000 bond if it's a special contractor license. It's the choice of the inspector.
So, and theoretically, you could have attached $8,000 of the bond, the funding capability of that individual. Thank you.
Is there any other questions? Janet?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm not sure if you covered the connection between the prohibition on a home inspector doing the subsequent work on a home or bidding to do the subsequent work if they find a plumbing problem, bidding to do the work on the plumbing problem, that's a prohibition that they can't do that for a year in your current statute. How does that affect an exempt inspector now or if the bill would pass?
Thank you, Chair Brown and staff. Thank you for the question. The current statute indicates that a certified home inspector is prohibited from doing the work. So what this bill would do is require, close the exemption, force all those people to become a certified home inspector, and they then would be required to not perform any work on a home they inspected for the period of a year. Today, because they're not certified, they're exempt from the law, they can go ahead and do the inspection and do the work the next day.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Shawford.
I'm a contractor, and I'd much rather inspect for dry rot than replace it, because I've been on my belly underneath the house cutting out dry rot more than I care to think about.
Big spiders.
Just a little editorial there. Forgive me.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
How can you belly underneath the house?
I see. What did they do with it? Steve, you just want to testify on this?
Pictures of that video attack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Steve Telfer, representing the Oregon Real Estate Inspectors Association. As I indicated earlier, the association's board is meeting tonight, and this bill will be a significant topic of discussion. I think I can foretell, though, that the probability is that they are going to ask me to seek a note from the chair to go to legislative council and craft an amendment to the bill that probably would just plain repeal the little uncodified section that has this grandfather clause in it. You know, if you think about it, you've got a 200-question test in a topic that is quite complex. You've got structural, you've got plumbing, you've got electrical, and understanding of the laws and so on. People who are in this business are doing it really out of a sense of consumer protection. That's the whole underpinning of the industry. The real estate industry generally refers buyers to a list of certified home inspectors, and it's those buyers making arguably maybe the largest investment of their lifetime buying a home, and they need that protection. So we feel pretty strongly that these folks need to be certified, they need to know what they're talking about, and generally speaking, home builders are expert in certain things, particularly framing and structural and so on. They may not have the expertise on the plumbing. They may not have the expertise on electrical or heating and cooling and all of the ventilation activities and so on. So, again, we would very much appreciate it, Mr. Chair, if you could hold this bill over until next week, and we'll have a chance to have our board take a look at it, and I'll be happy to come back and let you know where they are.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, Steve? Seeing none, thank you very much for testifying. I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2076. And with that, committee, is there anything the committee has to bring up? If not, Janet?
We were not aware at Wednesday's meeting that today was going to have, we were going to have an early floor session. That may happen more regularly on Fridays, and so we'll kind of do like we did today. If we know ahead of time, we'll put 9 or after floor session, but if we don't know ahead of time, we'll probably have to do what we did today.
Anyway, if there's nothing else, we are adjourned.
I want to make...